you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong for our finale show of this year anyway. We're going to be doing a lot of fun stuff in 2022, but it's the last show of 2021, and so we figured why not do one for the fans. When we say for the fans, Jacqueline and I, we always show up. We bleed for you fans, but this one, we just got a lot of fan requests to do this particular movie, to talk about its controversial tomato meter score, so we're going to get into, yes, it's time for Eternals, the latest film in the MCU. We're going to talk about that with a very special guest. But before that, it's nice to be back with you, Jacqueline Coley. How has your life been since, I don't know, when was the last time we hung out? Was it at your Thanksgiving? Which, by the way, thank you so much. I had a ball.
Yes, it was fun. Me and you got to hang out in the wilds, not on the internets, but in the actual IRL. It was awesome. And thanks for coming. It's fun times. I'm excited to talk about this movie. You guys can stop DMing me about it. Like, I get it. I know we want to discuss it.
DMs.
A couple. More than a couple.
I see, with this movie in particular, it's currently 48% on the tomato meter, which is just shocking to hear, regardless whether you've seen the movie or not. And if you're listening to this, you probably should have seen the movie because it's going to be spoilers aplenty. It's a newer movie. I just want to warn y'all right off the bat. But 48%, Jack, when you hear that and you're like, but it's an MCU movie, right? It's in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. All those movies are fresh, regardless of how any one person feels about a particular MCU film. They're all fresh. Now, I will say the audience score for Eternals is still fresh, 78%. So should it be rotten? What's going on with the critics on this? We're going to see where it ranks for us in the context of other MCU films, other comic book films. Chloe Zhao is a director because this is her first film. Not only is this her first rotten film she's directed, it's her first film that is not at least 90% on the tomato meter. And so there's a lot to get into with this movie. And this is why we bring in my Marvel Cinematic Universe, really my comic book movie whisperer. This is why you bring in somebody who's literally on a show called Comic Book Shopping, where he's so entertaining buying comic books on a weekly basis. They had to put the cameras and mics on him with very special guests in his own right. He recently presented this film for Marvel at El Capitan, and he looked like he had a good time presenting the Spider-Man No Way Home trailer. There was also, I think Tom Holland came out for that. Coy, that must have been a life-changing event for you. This is Coy Jandrew, by the way.
Both were life-changing because this is, I feel, the first one that I was loud enough about that Marvel heard it. I was like, no, this is how it's done. And that really felt special. And then Spider-Man was how I learned to read. I literally put together photos to words with Todd McFarlane's Torment in 1990. And I have a picture of me on my second birthday with a Spider-Man number 2 behind me. And I got to tell Todd that he helped me learn to read because of Spider-Man. So Tom and I really connected over the foundational aspect of the character for us. And then to be live streamed to Mexico City, as well as in front of 500 Angelenos, as well as knowing like 40 million people would watch it. It was kind of the most self-actualized I've ever felt, because I know I'll never play Spider-Man, but I got to introduce Spider-Man. Like, I got to be with, in that context, Spider-Man showing the trailer to the world. And the whole world had to wait for us to press play, which just felt like that's the closest I'll ever be to being Spider-Man. And it was impossibly special. So Sony, Marvel, you lovelies, it's been a solid wrap up to a very long, rough year. Like, that's how you end a year like 2021 has been.
Well, I would say don't give up on that Spidey dream just yet, because apparently there's a lot of timelines going on right now. Much like
I'm
you,
the
I learned how
Thompson
to read.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, I was 1990 was the year I learned how to read. The unfortunate part of that is that I was 10 years old. So, Coy, let me ask you this, because you are the self-proclaimed Neo from the Matrix of Eternals. And what I gather by that is that you're probably a fan of this movie. So I'm going to ask you a question, and you know where I'm going with this. Is Rotten Tomatoes wrong about Eternals with that 48% tomato meter score?
I've done this show before, and I've given certain lists of movies that I thought, hey, come on, let's reanalyze this. I've had many conversations with you, with Lucy. I've briefly talked about this with, I think, anyone that will listen. I've never thought Rotten Tomatoes was more wrong until today.
Wow. Okay. Then we kick off with a spicy take right off the bat. So now the only place to go is back to Jacqueline Coley. Jacqueline, you and I seem to have fun jockeying for position as to who has to give the tougher synopsis. And I might have just won because you have to tell us what Eternals is about. You can just say there's Celestials and Deviants and be done with it if you want. You have the floor, m'lady.
Celestials and Deviants, and I'm going to be done. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm not going to do that. So this is what we'll go ahead and do. I'm going to try on this one, but just know that the one of the reasons why this movie has the score that it has is because of what I'm going to have to explain. But here we go. So the Eternals, this is a group of 10 warriors. There are 5 thinkers and there are 5 sort of warriors, actual people that fight. And they have been living on Earth since the dawn of time, sort of guiding humanity to further aspects of advancement. On the team, we have Athena, who's actually based off the goddess Athena. We have Kingu. He's, you know, shoots fires from his lightning. They all have really cool powers. We have Faustus, who's able to sort of think up any ideas. And the whole time that they've been here, on top of guiding humanity, they've also been fighting these really gnarly looking alien things called Deviants. Their whole mission, no matter what happens, slavery, wars, doesn't matter. All they really want to do is destroy Deviants. And during this time, they have friendships, alliances, they fall in love. And we start the film. The Deviants are back. They've all been waiting to leave and go home. The Deviants are back. And then we go through, I would say, a topsy-turvy sort of world tour to try and kill the very last of the Deviants. But spoiler alert, at the end, it turns out that the Eternals were just a grand plot to destroy the Earth so that it can billion galaxies can be sprung out from this sort of like all-eye being. It's really complicated, has lots of space stuff, but the Eternals essentially figure out that their entire mission was a lie, and they double-cross their makers so that they can actually save the Earth from being a tiny little incubation pod for a billion galaxies. And they win, and then they get in trouble, and Harry Styles shows up, and Marvel's first sex scene, first gay kiss. Boom.
Yeah. There were a lot of firsts in this movie, and that was maybe the greatest synopsis we've ever had in the history of the show. So your practicing in the mirror paid off there, Jack.
It was definitely no practicing with that. But listen, I got it through because I just tried to get you the more important stuff. I'm not going through all these people's names, but at least you know they fight and think.
They fight, they think, and wow, is that a whole lot to chew on, because you're talking about so many different planets and universes, galaxies, all of that good stuff wrapped up into this, the very history of humanity, predating humanity, and it really seems like just so many times in movies, humans are really the bane of everyone else's existence. And so I'm sorry to any celestial beings that may be enjoying this podcast. It is produced by the one, the only, Producey Lucy. Welcome to the show, Producey Lucy. Now, I'm not sure about your feelings on Eternals as a film yet, but I know that you loved some of the casting.
Oh, yes. I'll refrain from sharing my thoughts so y'all can take that for the show, but I love Barry, I'm going to butcher his name here, Barry Keoghan?
Keegan?
It's actually Kogan. It's way easier than we all made it hard.
Barry. Oh, I mean, he barely speaks in the movie and he almost steals it, I think. He's a scene stealer. He's so good. I can't wait to see him do all sorts of stuff. You could see him in A Killing from the Sacred Deer, that creepy movie.
Yeah.
He's just so incredible, the way he holds himself, his eyes. Loved
and now
him.
He's getting really buff.
I know.
If you follow him on Instagram, right? Dude is like... Yeah. He's going to have like a Kumail glow up, legit.
He is, woof. I am excited to watch this boy's career. And then Gemma Chan, I didn't really like understand how awesome she was in Crazy Rich Asians, but I think she was a great leading lady. I think she's so beautiful. I love just watching her on screen. It was fun.
Dig it.
Okay, so we know Coy loves this movie. Jacqueline, your feelings on Eternals. Is Rotten Tomatoes right or wrong with that 48%?
One thing I will say, Mark, I think I'm like rubbing off on you because like one of my favorite things when a movie is not bad, but also not good is my favorite thing. It's like, I'm not saying it's bad, but I have questions. I say that all the time. And so when you came in here, it's like, listen, I just have questions. I'm like, a little rub it off on you there. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I'm sure you probably had the same.
I'm the same way. I vacillate between like what my specific score should be. I think Rotten Tomatoes is wrong because I feel like this movie deserves to be, if not fresh, closer to fresh. And 48%, it's not bad if you're Jean-Claude Van Damme, but for an MCU movie, you kind of think, well, this should be fresh, right? I mean, all the other ones are fresh. I'd put this one just below fresh or just above fresh. It's right in that 58 to 62% range for me because, well, we'll get into that. But before we get into that, let's hear what the critics were saying way back when this movie was released. I don't know, what, 4 weeks ago? This is our segment with our expert review curation manager here at Rotten Tomatoes. Tim Bryan is going to tell us what the critics are saying about Eternals. And that is how we kick off the segment called 2 Minutes with Tim.
2 Minutes with Tim.
On paper, Eternals has a lot going for it. After winning Best Picture and Best Director Oscars for Nomadland, Chloe Zhao is the hottest director in Hollywood. And she has Gemma Chan, Kumail Nanjiani, Angelina Jolie, and Selma Hayek top-lining an incredibly diverse cast. But Eternals has an enormous task. Continue to set the stage for a new phase of the MCU, introduce a bunch of new characters, and deliver big thrills while staying true to Zhao's signature style. Unfortunately, while a number of critics found it to be admirably ambitious, with intriguing characters and some of the best cinematography of any Marvel movie, many felt the film was defeated by the sheer weight of its mission, along with an uneven tone and occasionally slow pacing. Eternals is rotten at 48% with 363 reviews, but it does have a 78% audience score. And just for reference, the next worst reviewed entry in the MCU, Thor: The Dark World, is at 66% with 285 reviews. We covered that one in a previous episode. So what did the critics have to say? In a Rotten review, Kylie Cheung of Salon.com wrote, "Eternals stands out as a triumph for diverse storytelling and representation, but its depth and pace are severely hindered by the same cast and outstanding star power that give the movie its spark. Still, Eternals lays exciting groundwork that hints at just how enormous and unexplored the rapidly expanding multiverse is." However, in a fresh review, Sarah Michelle Fetters of MovieFreak.com wrote, "Eternals shoots for the stars, and if the finished product isn't quite out of this world, it's still close enough to getting there that my interest in seeing where these characters go next is exceedingly high." So that's Eternals. Let's kick it back to everyone's favorite superheroes, Jacqueline and Mark. Back to you, folks.
Well, thank you, Tim. That's very sweet of you. I feel like the critics were divided on this one, and there are really two schools of thought with their division. So we're going to get into that. We're going to get into our feelings about the movie, our thoughts on the cast, our thoughts on the pacing, the depth, all that great stuff and more, including our ranking of where this movie fits within the context of the MCU pantheon right now with Movie Talk. Hit the music. I want to get right into this. So half the critics seem to be saying that they wanted more of like an art house superhero movie. And the other half of the critics said, well, no, they want it to feel more Marvel. And so, Coy, was this movie too art house? Was this movie too Marvel? Was it not enough of either one? What exactly is your take on how Eternals has been presented?
I think that part of why I think Rotten Tomatoes is wrong is this is the maturation of the MCU. It needed to be exactly this gateway drug between the two. If it was any less Marvel than people would have been, it was very little Marvel. It was maybe 10 to 15% Marvel. There were some name drops. There were some references. There was some tonalities in the fight sequences. But overall, it was the least Marvel film in the Marvel universe. If you cut that down even more, I don't think people would consider it Marvel. What Shang-Chi did was beautiful in that it was like a 70-30 split. It gave us a lot of new But there were moments that were certainly tied directly to the MCU in a way that felt like, oh, I know what we're doing here. I think it was really smart to release this very soon after Shang-Chi to show, hey, we're going to make these things where there's going to be more hand-holding in the sunset than there's going to be fight scenes. And I personally think that's how you get people that aren't fans of the MCU to understand there is a bit of a gateway. Marvel Comics in print is a series of books that go from young adult to full adult, that go from the YA line right to the Max line, that go from, you know, PG-13 Spider-Man comics to full-blown R-rated Deadpool comics. And the difference between Spider-Man and Deadpool is some of those jokes, is some of those tones, is some of those choices. So if everything feels the same, there's no difference between Deadpool and Spider-Man. If everything feels the same, then the people that don't like Marvel have a leg to stand on. So to me, presenting it like this, I could have done with even a little less Marvel. And I'm the Marvel guy. I could have done without the scene where they mentioned Thor when they were kids, because technically that doesn't make sense in canon. I don't understand how they would have known each other unless he was using the Bifrost. And what, it's another conversation. But my point being, is there a way to show people, hey, we're going to grow this up. Hey, you're going to complain about it anyway, but we're going to make a really special film? I don't think so. I think we're always going to encounter the I want this, it's not how I thought of it, Snyder Cut problem at all. Everyone's gonna theorize a movie in their mind up until it comes out, and if it's not exactly that, there will be complaints. I thought this movie did what every single Marvel naysayer has wanted, but unfortunately, it wasn't as approachable as I think they wanted it to be. This isn't a movie you can just casually watch. A lot of Marvel films are great to go to sleep to or to like watch for the 20th time casually. They're very approachable while you're eating and talking to your family movies. Not the first time. Don't you do that the first time you watch it. But as you get into it, this movie is a watch. This is a book. This is something to digest. It's a commentary on morality, mortality, and theology. That's not something you get in the background. So if they'd had a little less Marvel, I would have been happy, but I don't think it would have worked for the greater MCU as a whole.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Jacqueline, the tonality is one thing we can talk about all day, but in your eyes, did they simply try to do too much with Eternals?
I mean, that's the too much, try to do too much. I think they really wanted a movie that does too much. And I think this happens to be that movie. And I think when Marvel signs up to do these types of movies, tone, which this movie has issues with, but clearly does make a distinction on shifts that they're trying to make, and planting seed crumbs that you can sort of like reap later is more important, I think, than the movie's intended instant commerciality or what people are going to understand it to mean in the bigger MCU. And I'll just use the example that I love using all the time, which is Age of Ultron. Like
right.
Joss Whedon, like he talked all the time about how they were asking so much more of him for that script, both from like what it sets up, because think of what it sets up. It sets up Wakanda, it sets up, you know, space, it sets up Ragnarok. I mean, this is literally the next half of the phase that he's in, and the phase after that he's setting up in this one movie. I think Eternals is this moment for this new set of phases where it's going to look a little messy right now because they're literally putting some ropes down. And I think they're like, hey, we put ropes down with someone like Chloe Zhao, even if it doesn't turn out correct, we'll still be able, because she even talked about it. A lot of the decisions that this movie does were made before she came on board.
Jacqueline, I've never thought of it that way. I love that so much, the Age of Ultron parallel, because Age of Ultron is one of the movies that I actually have more problems with than most. I did this show talking about it, and I'm usually a team like 20% higher, and that one I'm like maybe 20% lower. But yeah. It all the things I have a problem with of Age of Ultron, this did the opposite of. Every time I felt they rushed or added in a joke in Age of Ultron, this one gave me an emotional moment. This movie has, in my opinion, 10 characters who are so well fleshed out that there are conflicts happening off screen that I go, of course that's how they'd handle that. Of course this is the issue with these characters. Whereas in Age of Ultron, every time they cut to like a conflict, I'm like, oh, they wouldn't normally fight, but they're doing that for the sake of phase 7. Oh, this normally wouldn't happen, but we need to set up this. This has, I think, 10 characters in 2 hours and 40 minutes that I know more about than I've known about with 3 movies of a character arc, and I just met these people because I think they do so much in dialogue and so much in these really drawn out long pauses in conversation. So this is kind of the age of anti-Age of Ultron for me. So I love the idea that people in phase 5 will go back and like, "Oh, this unspoken masterpiece."
Yeah. And not even an unspoken masterpiece, but just the difficulty of what they were trying to set up. I think there's so much setup in this movie that they know it's probably not always going to play out as well. And so they're like, hey, if we're going to play with house money, and Chloe Zhao directing with starring Angelina Jolie, it's kind of house money.
Yeah. And the movie looks gorgeous. The movie throughout, I was stunned by the quality of the shots, of the scope, the cinematography blew me away. It might be the best I've ever seen in an MCU movie, which is saying something. But what the strongest part of this movie was for me was the characters. So getting to meet these characters, and like Coy, you intimated how well fleshed out they are. I felt that with every new character I met, not knowing virtually anything about these folks walking into the movie. And so the standouts for me were Gemma Chan as Cersei. I thought she was great. I thought that was a phenomenal lead performance. And then I also really, I don't think I'm alone in this, I loved Kumail Nanjiani as Kingo. And it's not just because he gives all of us comedians hope to one day have abs. It's just because he really brings a lot of that MCU flavor that we've come to know and love to this, because he's funny. Mm-hmm. He's just naturally funny. And when we get to see him and what his career on Earth evolves into, it's a nice surprise, and it's funny, and it plays, and it just gives us some levity. Because my biggest issue with this movie was just how it felt like we were plotting along over the same plot points throughout the 2.5 hour plus runtime. It felt like we had all come to this consensus that we're not sure if we should be meddling with humanity, if we should not be stringing them along. And then it just feels like we have that same conversation every 500 years or so. And at some point, it's like, can we just move on from this? And so I felt like we kept kind of retracing our steps a little bit with this movie. But that's my overall thought on it. As far as the characters themselves go, start with you, Coy. Who really blew the screen up for you in a good way? Who really was like, oh, wow, I'm so glad we now have this character in our canon.
So briefly to speak on your issue real quick, though, I love that your issue is the retreading, because I think that's actually one of its strengths. So for my purpose of being here, I do think with the 10 characters, what you want is to see, for example, each of their powers ties to their beliefs in humanity, which I think is genius and has not been done as well in other movies. And each of their outlooks is shaped by the decisions they make in the second and third act that I don't think would go as well if they hadn't rehashed it so many times. Because I do think, like, for example, you love Kumail's character. He is someone who loves humanity from a distance because he's made himself above humanity, but he still loves them because without them, he's not a star. So he literally keeps people away. He's got powers that are offensive, that are distance making. And in keeping those people away, that puts them above him. So he decides not to be in the fight at all because he both needs humanity and also wants to be with his family. That's something that happens that isn't even discussed, because we love and know this character so well. We've got Thena, who is someone dealing with mental illness, which as someone who struggles with the concept of Americans not seeing mental illness as the same as physical illness on a daily basis, it really was beautiful to see someone like Angelina Jolie go, hey, by the way, this is just as real as losing an arm. Maybe give a crap about your neighbor. Like that mm-hmm. to me was so important. And her thing is being maternal in a way that's almost detrimental, whereas Salma Hayek was maternal in a way that's very positive. That's why we had to lose Salma Hayek. Otherwise, the conflict couldn't have existed. But you've got a very maternal Thena, but that makes her a warrior. That makes her someone that nurtures with violence in a way that is not something she wants. So she loves humanity, but doesn't understand because she's the one that's got the mind where that's dealing with all this. So she's got a defensive offensive power set, and that ties into all of her decisions. So I think if we hadn't had it reiterated to us multiple times, then each of these 10 characters' second and third acts wouldn't have felt as impactful, wouldn't have felt as important, because if we just go like, okay, here's the problem, let's move on, we don't get each of their journeys that tie into their powers beautifully, that tie into that third act twist. Because if you look at this movie, it actually has three different conflicts. You've got the epiphany of the deviants actually being effectively human beings. Like, the deviants are revealed to be sentient, and they're just doing their job. They're very much like us, that they're just trying to survive. And I love that that was one of the twists. Then we've got the Icarus twist, and he's just a cop following orders. And then you've got basically the idea that you've got billions and billions and billions of races that are now not going to exist because of these Eternals that were tasked with that very job. So Eternals are basically the bad guys of this whole story, not in a Punisher way, not in a Kingpin way where he's just defending a city, a literal billions of lives destroyed because they messed with the order of things. If we didn't get the, hey, are humans worth saving? We as humans would have no eyeline for those three other conflicts. So I think it was absolutely essential. We live in that as much as we do, both to connect us to the 10, but also to make it relevant to us when the Celestials don't get to actually populate the planet. For me.
Do we need all of that in the MCU? I guess we'll be
oh, 100%. This movie, it's also an opportunity to have movies like this over here while you've got Thor over here, while you've got Cap over here. Like, if without this, we don't get more.
Right,
we just get the
same. Doesn't it diminish a little bit? Doesn't it diminish every other story that we've ever told in the MCU? Because I don't know if y'all remember 12, 13 years ago, the MCU, it was just two rich guys fighting each other. And man, yeah, what a good time we had. And now it just feels like with the scope of storytelling, because there's been previous MCU movies that have gone on a separate path, Guardians of the Galaxy being one of them, Shang-Chi, it was another origin story. But now you have this, and it just feels like this, the scope of this is so wide and so expansive to include the very origin of the entire sense of being any of us have ever had, that it kind of diminishes everything else we've ever done. Like, it makes the Battle of New York just feel like we're just watching ants build a hill. And I don't know, maybe it takes some of the punch out of all the other stories that we've seen so far. Jacqueline, what's your thought on just the scope and how it relates to the rest of the MCU?
I don't think it takes the punch out. The reason why I don't think it takes the punch out is we've gone to the galaxies already. And as we go more into the galaxies, like, what the heck do we think is going to happen with Captain Marvel, the new one that's about to come out? You know, Guardians of the Galaxy is introducing us to new people. Guardians of the Galaxy makes it easier because it's shoving all of this stuff in the midst of a very funny, basically music opera, like a rock opera. So it's a little bit easier than with this, where there's just like really, you know, traumatic and sometimes very not funny aspects of what these guys have been through. It's one of the reasons why Kumail is such a valuable character in the movie, is because he really does keep that sort of like joke wheel going. Otherwise it would get so dour. So I don't think it's like too much. I think it's more, once we open it up, let's get back to smaller stories.
Yeah, I'm with you because I want Spider-Man to be friendly neighborhood again. I want the duality of Guardians and Captain America to be as clear as it should be. And I think we need those things to be. I want Winter Soldier followed by Guardians, which is how Phase 2 happened. I think this just expands out, but it's like Rogue One. Like, we still have Star Wars, but we also have more contained Star Wars. We have things that expand the universe out and have this insane scope, but we keep to The Mandalorian. We keep to Boba Fett. That doesn't diminish either because we've had the craziness of Last Jedi, you know?
And that's the hypocrisy of what I'm saying, of the point I'm making. Because it, to some extent, we all as an audience are a little hypocritical with what we actually want out of a movie. Because with Star Wars, like, you hear this all the time, and I agree with it. We're done with the Skywalkers. In my opinion, we got a bunch of great movies, including three great movies to cap it off, about that story. And so now we have this huge galaxy, and we're not really exploring a lot of it yet anyway. And hopefully we will. Whether or not the fans line up the same way they did to go see the Skywalkers, that's a conversation we'll have later. But with this, it just felt like so violent. It felt like I was on a ride and I was going at like 1G, and then all of a sudden I just got blasted into outer space. And I was prepared for an opening up of the world, of the universe, but it just, this one seemed like it did all of that so quickly meeting new characters, seeing new powers, seeing what the conflict was, and having all of those things take all those twists and turns during the course of one movie, it felt like a whole lot to chew on. And like you said, I would have felt differently about it if it did feel a little more like one of those movies that you could put on and rewatch endlessly. But it almost feels like this movie, going back to revisit it, it's almost more like homework than it is putting on a movie for enjoyment's sake. Does that make sense, or am I just a Debbie Downer here?
No, I mean, look, I could see how you would be like, okay, yeah, this is definitely going to be dense. That's
yeah, and I just don't need a movie to shove popcorn in my face. But it again, I do need to be a little spoon-fed and not just like have the entire drum of Marvel Cinematic Universe goodness just dumped down my gullet at once.
Do you find you have different moods for different movies, I think, is how you keep this from having the bubble burst. Like, I do think there will be times you'll want a think piece. And if Marvel hadn't given us a think piece yet, that would steer you out of the universe. If you wanted to have something that was, hey, I'm going to look at a commentary on humanity and all that it could be, you then wouldn't put in an MCU film until this one. So if you want the things you've gotten so far, you put in your Shang-Chi's, your Black Widows, anything else, you know, that's just the two we've had most recently in the same vein. But for me, what made it so special is that it isn't the thing we've gotten to have in the background, is that each of these characters you might identify with more with one day because they're so archetypal. You asked me who my favorites were. For me, Thena with Mind Weary, having mental illness as a strength, not a negative. She's literally the one that knows more than everyone else, but she's seen as someone lacking. That's such a beautiful example of how we perceive even everyday people we meet. Like, my head's like a bag of cats and I couldn't do a lot of other jobs, but this job I can do because that bag of cats translates into entertaining to some people. Whereas, like, if I was an accountant, I think I would have just be like, it'd be like Michael Douglas and falling down every day, not conducive to anyone's happiness. But then you've also got like Druig, who literally sees humanity as like the opiate of the masses. You've got Druig, who thinks that humans are happier if they're not thinking, if they're not able to make these choices for themselves. And if that isn't a commentary in the last 100 years, I don't know what is. How many movies could have just been Druig? Druig could have been the lead of a number of movies because that's usually the conflict. So the fact that we have 10 characters that have this big of worldview on the characters of human beings as a concept, that means I can watch this movie 10 different ways. I can rewatch this movie and go, okay, what is Druig's view? What is Gilgamesh's view? What is Icarus's view? And then I've also got the eye line of the incredible Jon Snow, who knows nothing again, but will know so much very soon. Because I love the fact that our eye line is a guy who, Black Knight is a character who wields basically the anti-Mjolnir. He's a guy that we like, who makes horrible decisions throughout the comic book. So I love that they chose to give us an eye line into these giant creatures with a guy that's like not so great all the time, because human beings not so great all the time. So I would argue one of the most rewatchable movies because of the nuance, because of the homework, because of the dedication to actually seeing not just its story, but our story as a species in a different way every time.
Can I just say this, though? I just want to give a shout out to Lucy. And I remember this. I wanted to embarrass her about it. Through our entire outline, she doesn't call Richard Madden Richard Madden. He's just Robb Stark. So, like, the Game of Thrones crossover was real. So I'm so like glad that you shot. Brought up Game of
I
Thrones.
I love that they put that shot of Richard Madden and Kit Harington just looking at each other at the beginning of the movie. And they just give each other the quick what's up. And at least the crowd that I saw this movie and got a giggle out of it. And so I liked that. And it was a nice way to ingratiate us into this movie and just realize that this movie is just going to get deeper and deeper and wider and wider. Jacqueline, what was something, because I can't imagine you were surprised by much in this movie. Because you know the backstory so well. So, Jacqueline, what surprised you? And then, Koi, I want to go back to you if anything did shock you in this movie. But, Jacqueline, what was the big, was it the reveal that, like, all these people that we thought we were rooting for may not actually be people at all? They might just be these robot programs, and then we also might be Breaking Bad.
Well, I will say, I appreciate you giving me so much love, but this is, like, kind of a name drop, but not really, but I did a big interview with the cast of The Eternals. And so that was actually where I got D'd up on the actual comic. I had not known about The Eternals. I was like one of these people who were like, when Guardians of the Galaxy came out, I was giving so many people crap. Because I'm like, I know just enough about comics to know that if you have somebody bragging about how much they loved the Guardians of the Galaxy before James Gunn made that a movie, they're lying. Like, this is social media lying.
Yep.
Like somebody would be like, oh yeah, I saw that comic once, or like something like that. That's like reasonable. But for someone to be like, I have the biggest Guardians of the Galaxy stand before that, liars. Anyway, so let me just say I didn't have a lot of knowledge. But the reason why I didn't get as surprised was because I know Chloe Zhao. And I think I understand how she likes to write a structure. And I definitely understand that she's a big person about character. That's why she directs the movie with 10 of them. More than that, but 10 main ones. I knew that Richard Madden was on bullshit the minute he came out. Like, I was like, you are the only, like, straight white male on this team. And that's a problem. You know what I mean? Because I know Barry. I'm not saying that he isn't, but he, like, Barry's pansexual.
Druid, he's flexible.
You know what I mean? Like, he's possessing male, female bodies. Like, they didn't say he was explicitly queer. I think that dude is just looking for an opportunity.
Yeah, we also do. We could just see it in the way that Barry just kind of stares as Druid. He just kind of stares, and he just has like that evil look to him. Mm-hmm. At least the way that us as humans would perceive it, because we don't want to think that we're just going to be mindless drones. But you know, Richard Madden as Icarus, he's just so charming and good looking, and we get to see the first sex scene in MCU history, which I actually thought was a really, really well done sex scene. Yeah. I was like, that was good stuff. And that's not the, you know, the 10-year-old, the 12-year-old in me just waiting to see if there's nudity in the late night HBO movie that's about to come on. Like, I thought it was a really I felt the power. It emotionally resonated with me, and I was rooting for them as a couple. And so it did do something to me, Coy. I'll say that. And that was the biggest surprise of the movie for me until the post-credit scenes, where you see Icarus and it's like, oh no, we had this plan and it was going to work. And now you're turning your back on us and I don't know who to root for anymore. What surprised Coy Jander about this movie?
I was very surprised by how much they made me care about the Deviants so quickly. I assumed Icarus, by the way, Icarus is not a bad guy in the comics. That is a twist unique to the movie. So that wasn't something that I was waiting for, but like Jacqueline, I was like, I don't know if this guy, like from the trailers. So that one didn't get me, but me actually going like, wait, as soon as the first Deviant spoke, our Deviant spoke, and I was like, oh, that's kind of us. Like more than even Richard Madden, I mean, more than even Jon Snow, I was like, wait, that's who we are to them. We're just serving a purpose. So that twist really got me. I do want to talk about the sex scene though, because that weirdly was the loudest thing I heard next to the bigots. Like, the people that have a problem with Fastos, that's another conversation. But next to, like, the people that I would consider, like, not monsters of people, because monsters we don't even need to discuss, but, like, good people being so upset about, like, exposed shoulders was my biggest surprise. My biggest surprise of the movie was the fact that we are in 2021 and people are more okay with seeing a child, a 15-year-old Spider-Man, get turned into dust and evaporate, and they're like, hey, my 12-year-old can see someone get murked by nature, but he can't see shoulders. We are so prudishly backwards with sex versus violence in this country, and I thought, like, we'd gotten a little bit better lately because I live in California, I'm in a bubble, but then I was like, wait, we still swear in a Bible, and we still claim we're not a religious state, and now people are upset with shoulders. So this actually made me believe in humanity more in that this film can exist, but it made me believe in Americans less in that they have a problem with nudity from the neck up. Like, I was embarrassed for America for like a month.
Can I tell y'all something? And this maybe it's a little too much information. When Mark Ellis makes love, he does show with his clavicles exposed. You can see.
Thank you. Thank you.
You can see the clavicle because I am progressive and I'm a much better straight white guy than Icarus. Just in terms of my motivation. Now, again, I could just be mind controlled by Druig the whole time. So next time Jacqueline wants to yell at me for not being in a relationship, I'm going to tell her, look, you go talk to Druig. Druig's my boss. He's the one telling me what to do. And I have no power over my own destiny.
I mean, I don't yell at you about that. I'm not your mom. I just want to harness her energy every now and again and give you disapproving glances.
It's the Coors Light squat combo that really makes the clavicle shine, though. They're a well-honed clavicle now, so they got to be shown. You got to rock them.
With a guy who's shredded as you, that just makes me feel all good inside. Did we like the... Because I thought the kiss worked really well, too. It's the first gay kiss in the history of the MCU, and I like that it didn't... it wasn't made up to be this big moment where it's like the music swelling, and it just, it felt very natural to me. And I also really liked Brian Tyree Henry's storyline in this, because he seemed like he was actually one of them who liked to become one of us. Like he was one of them, but yeah. Then he's like, no, I kind of enjoy, you know, go Bulls. I just got to see Michael Jordan. He's pretty close to one of us. And so I liked that there was that dichotomy between them, and that there were certain characters that were more relatable than others. It just, again, it just felt like a lot of time was taken, and I felt like we ran over the same storylines more than we needed to.
I think, yes, just with different characters. Doesn't justify it, but I felt like they were just trying to give... I get why they didn't do it, because the worst thing in the world would be to get to that big fight scene at the end and only care about half of the people. It's sort of like an all or a nothing thing.
Yeah, and I felt like it did take a long time to get to that volcano, too. I feel like I was waiting a long time. I was like, at some point, can we just hire a hobbit to drop this ring in there? Like, this is taking a long time. And maybe I was just tired. I don't know. I don't know what has happened to me as a movie fan. Maybe I just don't have the endurance built up after not being in a theater for the better part of the last year and a half. So maybe that did have something to do with it. But then... the movie ends, and my theater went crazy with applause. I think a lot of it was rightfully so. And then we have a post-credit scene. And this is why I hope everybody out there has a Coy Jandrew in their life, because I needed to understand. First of all, I needed somebody to tell me that was Harry Styles, because I'm still listening to Backman Turner Overdrive. So I heard that was Harry Styles. And then I'm like, oh, that means something. That's the voice of Patton Oswalt. And so now Coy... if you could just break down, what exactly are we looking at with that post-credit scene? What does that post-credit scene mean for the future of the Marvel Cinematic Universe? Mm-hmm.
So Harry Styles is Thanos's brother. He is Eros. Eros is a very fun character that is, I think, going to be unneutered. There was a time where Eros was a beautiful, philandering, pansexual, just going for it Harry Styles of a man. And then they kind of like, they made him an Avenger and they called him Star Fox, and they tried to make him just like more streamlined. But I think in casting Harry Styles, we're going to go back to what Eros is supposed to be. He's a Jim Starlin creation. If you know Jim Starlin, the man doesn't make heroes. He makes very interesting characters that can do good or bad. And Pip the Troll is very much like a showman of showmen, but very much a troll. Like he is a self-serving man that is self-serving and even more of a self-serving man. So Eros is going to be really fun, because I think the best thing that could have happened at the end of this movie is Harry Styles, because it got all the Harrys in the MCU. It got a lot of people that wouldn't have seen this movie to come see it. It might have shown some people that only were new to the MCU with this movie that there is the scope of what Chloe Zhao built us. But it also is going to allow us to have a character that is devious, but lovable in casting Harry Styles. That man can do no wrong. Like, he can wear any dress or any pantsuit he likes, and he can do any sort of horrible business at me. Like, I got a lot of love for Harry Styles, both as an entertainer, as a human being, and now as Eros, because he authentically just feels like he's trying to do the right thing in real life. So I think when he does the wrong thing in the movie, I'll be like, but I trust you, Harry Styles. So I'm ready to be hurt. I'm ready to be hurt again, is what I'm saying. Like, I'm ready to be in pain. And then the second post-credit scene is basically the Ebony Blade is a mystical, mythical, demonic, very negative weapon that is kind of the inverse Mjolnir. It is fueled by making bad decisions. It is a very encouraging of awful things weapon, and it's passed down through a bloodline. So we've got a guy who's a good guy who must do bad things, kind of the inverse of Thor, who was kind of a bad person trying to become a hero. But in that, you've also got a certain voice that pops up, Mahershala Ali, who's going to be our Blade, in bringing him into the more Midnight Suns supernatural side of Marvel. This is how you bring in the Ghost Riders. This is how you bring in the Daredevils. This is how you bring in the underbelly of Marvel, because not only do we go out into the cosmos, but we go literally into the world where Mephisto and... I know that's a buzzword now, but I don't think we're getting Mephisto. But the world of Mephisto, where everything is supernatural and kind of horrific, and there's no better way to bring in Blade than through the Ebony Blade, for the way I think they're taking the character. Because the Blade character has been canceled so many times, there's not a streamlined continuity for him. So they can really reinvent Blade. And since Wesley Snipes was so iconically Blade, and since Blade, I think, started the Marvel film universe, like, I give Blade the credit more than X-Men and Spider-Man. Need to make sure that new Blade feels like the character without feeling like a rehash. So I think introducing him through this way is going to be a way to have Mershala put his stamp on it differently, if that makes sense. So those, both those two post-credit scenes were probably the two biggest ones we've had since Nick Fury came in. Like, these are hugely foundational.
Yeah, Jacqueline, those post-credit scenes knock your socks off, or were you like, all right?
So I very much enjoyed that the minute Harry Styles popped up, I literally was able to just like point right at the screen, like Leo in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and be like, that's the dude. And then what was really also interesting is everyone was screaming over Harry Styles. You, me, and people that, you know, listen to comedy stuff probably can say, oh, I immediately know Patton Oswalt's voice. He's a very recognizable face, but not everyone like would pull him out of a lineup of voices. So that was actually really fun.
Well,
but,
I saw him earlier at the screening.
Yeah, he was there. And you didn't know.
We were chewing
the
fat beforehand, and I just thought he was there because he's a huge comic book nerd. And so I'm like, are we excited? And so we were just talking about that. I had no idea. And he clearly did not know. He clearly knew that I did not know that he was in the movie.
I mean, I guess nobody was supposed to know that he was in the movie. So I bet he was like there as like the, you know, the best kept secret. Like the same way it was for like Natalie Portman when she showed up in Infinity War and people were like, wait, she's in it?
Yeah.
You know? So no, they were both really great. I like that they happened. I do think it's weird that I think in the legacy of this movie at this current moment, the post-credit scenes have really overshadowed the movie itself. For good or for bad, that should not be the case.
Sometimes it is like that end stinger is more impactful as you're leaving the theater, and that's what you really get talked about because it is the biggest surprise of the movie. Although I would argue that with Eternals, there were a lot of things that I was not expecting to see. There were a lot of twists and turns with characters and their intentions, and then the post-credit scene. It was almost too much, so we can only hope that someday in the future we get to see Harry Styles' clavicles bare in a Marvel Cinematic Universe. And so with that, I do have one more question about where this movie fits into your MCU ranking. But for that, I think we should go ahead and head to our behind the scenes talk. See what I did there? I gave y'all each a nice beefy 6 seconds to think about where this movie sits in your pantheon of Marvel Cinematic Universe films. Now, I famously enjoy all of them, and I would throw Eternals into that bunch as well. It's so much. I mean, I don't even know how you compare this movie to something like Thor the Dark World or The Incredible Hulk or any one of those movies that sometimes people feel lesser about in the MCU, because by comparison, even something like Dark World is such a smaller story than what we got with Eternals. So I can't put it too low because the scope, but I can't put it too high because of the repeat value, the enjoyment factor, just the way that the other narratives flow a little better, like a Civil War or like a Black Panther. So, Coy, you have the first say, sir. Where does this movie sit amongst the Marvel Cinematic Universe greats for you?
Number one, Winter Soldier. Two, Guardians. Three, Infinity War. Four, Iron Man. Five, Avengers 1. Six, Endgame. Seven, Civil War. Eight, Loki. Nine, Black Panther. 10, Eternals.
Okay. So technically it's the ninth as far as the movies go.
Yeah, I mean, I put all 30 in. It's canon. And then 11 is Spider-Man Homecoming and 12 is Shang-Chi. So it's been a good phase four for me. We got three in the top 12.
Jacqueline, I'm just glad our son is happy. What about for you? Is this one really in your top 10 like it is Coy's?
Keeping with the theme of the episode, I'm not going to be near as specific as Coy. But second tier. There's top tier, that's like the top third. In my top third, we have things like Guardians, Black Panther, Thor Ragnarok, the first Thor. I stand by that. I'm putting this in like second tier area, which is not the ones that I could do without, because I like all of the MCU and there's not a single movie that I would kick out of the boat, as it were. But I could do without things like the Hulk. I could do without the second Thor. I'm like, I could do without you. Even though I like am a fangirl of what it does, I don't always need to watch Age of Ultron. So
everybody hates on The Incredible Hulk. I don't know why.
No.
I don't know why.
Anyway, I put it in that second, the lower half of that second tier area. So like between 33% and 63% of the list, they're in that, you know, bottom half of that section.
What would your Rotten Tomatoes score be?
Yeah, so like I think Rotten Tomatoes is wrong about the Eternals, but just not colossally wrong. I think they're just misguided. How about
that? Yeah. So I think Jack and I are probably in that same like barely fresh. But if it was like a 59%, the famous baseball score, I wouldn't have to write an angry letter.
Like
but.
I'd be okay with anything above 65 for this one.
Okay,
I just don't think it should be worse than Thor: The Dark World.
And that's fair. And I think that we all, or at least Jack and I probably have Eternals somewhere in our same ranking of MCU movies, because I break it down like it's that time of the NFL season when you're looking at who is in the playoffs, who is in the hunt, and who is completely out of the mix. And so I feel like Eternals is in the hunt, a lot like my Washington football team. The Eternals are in the hunt. It's competitive. And so it's right in that middle tier, which I call Ant-Man. It's the Ant-Man tier. Because it's like, you know, I like Ant-Man. I'm happy to see it. I don't need to see it. It's fine. Eternals feels much more vital than an Ant-Man. Although I will say the Quantum Realm really is going to help us out a lot going forward that is sort of introduced with the Ant-Man lore. But I feel like Eternals is going to stand, I think it's going to stand the test of time and be a more important movie than maybe even we're giving it credit for now, just because of all the things that it is setting up that Coy was intimating throughout the show. And so I'm looking at all these MCU movies. By the way, our expert researcher, Mark Hoffmeyer, this is a full day of just him sorting out all of the MCU movies in order. And so here's my fun little trivia question for both of you. Is Eternals is actually currently, it is the second lowest grossing movie worldwide in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I think that a lot of, or at least some of that is going to be the responsibility of the last year and a half and what Earth is currently enduring. But I feel like if that's some of that is pandemic related, can y'all tell me what the lowest, as far as box office gross worldwide, Marvel Cinematic Universe is? Coy, you look like you have a guess.
Black Widow.
All right. Black Widow is Coy's guess. Jacqueline, do you have a wager?
Yeah, I think Black Widow or The Incredible Hulk.
The Incredible Hulk is the answer. The Incredible Hulk only did $265 million worldwide. Black Widow is almost at $400 million worldwide, and as is Eternals. So Black Widow only has Eternals by about $11 million. So look, Eternals is still having some run in theaters, so it might surpass that eventually, but I just thought it was a fun little nugget.
Thank you.
This is what I'm here for, because I certainly am not an expert on Eternals. That is Coy Jandrew's job, and he did a fantastic representation of that today. Because, look, bottom line is this. Whatever you want to say about Eternals, it opened up the universe for the MCU, and it also was a very progressive film in that we got the first MCU sex scene. We got the first gay superhero on the big screen. We got that first kiss. We got the first deaf superhero, and we got the first South Asian superhero. So there's a lot of firsts. And I think very important first with this movie. And Coy, you had one last thing to say before we move on to mailbag.
Yeah, it's important to me. I wanted to talk about, I talked about earlier how all of the powers tie into their choices and how I love that, because a lot of times in comic book movies, their powers seem completely erroneous to their decision making. And I think in comic books, it's a lot more like correlative. Like you do feel, just like in life, like I like the gym for my sanity, and I do feel like my moving in the world a certain way affects my, like those things are very important. So powers paralleling decision making. So I love personally that Marvel decided that Fastos wouldn't just be our first gay superhero. He was also the one that chose to create a family because he was a creator. So I love that it wasn't just like, I thought it was very important that in a movie as big as Avengers, we did have our first gay mention of character, but it did definitely feel a little bit like Disney going like, okay, we did the thing. I wanted way more. And obviously now we got that, but I love that it wasn't just him being a gay superhero. It was him creating a family as a way with connecting with humanity. It was him connecting by way of literal creation to the level of, he was kind of the one that got humanity the most. And I think it's really important for audiences that don't necessarily have friends in the LGBTQ community or people that they know directly to see how foundational it is to connect to all kinds of families, and that adoption is just as important as blood family, and that any relationship is as important as your straight white relationship, Ted in Idaho. Like, that is so important to me that Marvel did this on such a scale that this was a summer blockbuster that made that something that didn't feel like it was pandering, that didn't feel like it was just for the sake of doing it, but that felt foundational to what humanity can be. And that's another huge reason I love this movie, is that Brian Tyree Henry and Marvel didn't didn't play it as, look at me. They played it as like, this is life. And the whole cast didn't feel aggressively progressive. And it didn't feel like we were watching a movie where they cast someone of each race. It felt like, hey, if you're going to make a bunch of aliens that are robots about humanity, it wouldn't just be a bunch of people that watch Bill O'Reilly. It wouldn't look like that. So it was really important to me to have this cast be this, and especially Fastos, because I think we're a little behind, and that helped a lot to get us to where we should be.
Well said. Standing ovation from me, sir. So now we move on to, and we go to mailbag, and I'm actually told that we don't have a mailbag today because it's a repeat of a previous mailbag. So once again, Iram in Indonesia, we're going to do Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter in the new year. I promise we're going to do it. And with that, we simply go to our grand finale. All of our fans can email us anytime. rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com. And we got a lot of great, thoughtful emails about doing Eternals for this episode, which was part of the inspiration, other than the fact that every time Coy and I interacted in person, he said, when can I talk Eternals? So shout out Bonnie Murdoch, Alicia Dixon, Nicholas Bayfield, and Danielle Kester, who wanted us to do this episode, and so many more of y'all who have let us know via social media, however you want to get in touch with us. Again, our email is rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com. And with that, we say thank you and goodbye to the crew here today, but not before Coy Jandrew tells us all the wonderful things he's working on and gives us a streaming recommendation. And you can tell us Hawkeye, Coy. You can say Hawkeye if you want. But I know you watch a lot of stuff that is not just in the context of the MCU. So what is the newest and the latest and the greatest for you? And what should everybody be watching at home?
Let me where I'd find me first, because I got to percolate. For some reason, my brain didn't prep a streaming rec. Find me at Coy Jandreau. It's spelled like that. CoyJandreau on Instagram, on Twitter, on TikTok. I'm on TikTok and I'm trying to learn it. And I'm literally watching 12-year-olds on YouTube to learn how to TikTok and feeling 87. So validate me. Help me understand. But also, I'm doing rewatches of Matrix, Justin Spider-Man with Christian Harloff over on SDN. I'm doing Hawkeye reactions with The Real Rejects. I'm doing Spider-Man stuff with Sony. I've got stuff coming out in the next year I can't talk about, but it has all been thanks to you guys, and thanks to Rotten Tomatoes for having me on, because this is my favorite thing to meet new audiences and to reach new people. So tweet me, Instagram me, yell at me on the street. It's happened more lately and it's made me happy and then also uncomfortable because it's real. But please, please hunt me down. As far as watching something, I rewatched recently The Animatrix, and that is streaming on HBO Max. Okay. And I watched it for the first time when it first came out, and I didn't get it as much. And I do feel like it has helped expand my worldview, not just in my own love of Matrix, but also animation styles. I tend to have a hard time connecting with animation because I like the uncanny valley freaks me out. Like, I feel like when I see a human being, I know what's what. But I do think there's something about us as humans, like when we react to a snake or a spider, that's because like we know it's negative. I do think there is something about something being almost human, that something happened a long time ago that freaked us out. So I see animation sometimes, it looks too real, and I'm like, that might have been something that tried to kill me in a past life. But I digress. Animatrix gave me much more of an understanding of why, like, friends of mine love anime and why people that I really respect and admire get more out of animated movies than I do. So I feel like Animatrix was a really good gateway drug into me understanding an entire medium of filmmaking that, short of Spider-Verse, I hadn't understood before. So Animatrix's story is genius. The animation styling is genius. It's going to be important, I imagine, for Resurrections. I haven't seen it yet. And it's something that you can watch on HBO Max right now.
Sweet. All right. And The Matrix is Coy's religion, as he told us before. So I still believe in the Force, Coy, The Matrix. And whether you're taking the blue pill or the red pill, we want everybody to have a safe and merry new year. And good luck in 2022, everyone. Let's do it right this time. What do we all say? Huh? Raise a glass of champagne, or at least apple cider, to that. A whole lot more naked clavicles in 2022. Once again, you can email us rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com. Subscribe, or rate, or review, whatever the way you choose to digest your podcast, encourage you to do what that platform says. Hey, if you do this, or you hit this button, or you do this, it's going to get the show up there. Do that for us. You've done it so many times, and we really appreciate each and every one of the members of our fresh ketchup crew. Next week, Jacqueline, woo, boy, we're talking a TV show. And when I say TV show, I mean a streaming show, because it is The Witcher Season 1 with special guest Trisha Hershberger, who just did Binge Battle, also about The Witcher. So her and Maude Garrett had a lot of things to say, and we'll get deep into The Witcher season one as season two is now upon us. It's going to be a good time, as was this. I think we all learned a lot. I think we all gained a little bit of insight into the MCU and possibly what to expect in the future of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. For everybody here at Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong, Brian Perez, our esteemed engineer, Tim Ryan, our review curation manager, producer Lucy, Jacqueline Coley, my esteemed co-host, who once again just makes a hell of a Thanksgiving dinner, and our special guest, Coy Jandrew, I am merely Mark Ellis saying so long and Happy New Year.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.